You didn't think the ones he was doing in North Carolina at the time.
No, they were the same.
Rods with hyperbolic parabolas, and they were just the thing that you can see in any school here. No?
Did you see the large spheres that he made, the 12-foot spheres made with rods?
It was left in North Carolina or not?
They were commissions that he did. I tell you the honest truth, I've not seen them firsthand, but I've seen pictures of them.
Yeah.
With him standing near him, I think they were installations in some university or colleges.
When you ask me how I left a role concerned with the school and so on, first it was pretense to be concerned, thinking that because somebody leaves, something going to go wrong. And second is that the school began to change because there was a new department created, right?
Yes. The product design department was being created about that time.
And then you begin to lose contact. There are too many persons there, too many activities happening, and there are different faces. I miss Henry, to tell you the truth, as a person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because in spite that everybody was very critical of him, I think that he was the symbol of the school. And the one that provided some unity after all, in spite of everything. And that I miss him. I regret that he died. I would like to have gone to North Carolina and see him and revive our days together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But,
it was my understanding that the idea of industrial design or product design was part of the idea of the school from the very, very beginning. It was just a matter that they were waiting until the right moment to introduce that. Was that not correct?
I have no idea because I had no participation.
I had always heard that the founding of the school anticipated that the product design department would be added, that they even adopted that name product design rather than industrial design, which is much more widely used and is now the name. They've changed it to industrial design now.
Okay.
But that was something that came out of something that I think Bucky Fuller suggested, that you know you shouldn't call it industrial design, that it should be product design.
Okay.
At least that's what I've always heard. Again, I'm looking for confirmation of things like that, but you weren't aware of that.
No. There were a series of voids also in the school.
Voids
of
yes.
Communication and of events. Let's say there was no relation between the Department of Landscape Architecture and Architecture during my time. And I remember that when Lewis Clark left, I think that he left.
Yes.
I didn't know why he left, when he came back, what he was doing. To me, it was a person who was moving, working,
mm-hmm.
working. I mean, with the students. But I never, and I don't think that he got along with Serlo very well. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, I have a feeling they were always somewhat competing.
Serlo, I felt that was a much more, let's call it naturalistic landscape architect who appreciated more the richness of nature and the less formalism of the modern landscape architects, Berlin Marx,
mm-hmm.
or even Royston, where he was imitating the Mondrian, doing her gardens,
yes.
This pattern that had nothing to do with nature, you know, and the Japanese. And,
they brought Burley Marx back for a lecture about 4 years, 4 or 5 years ago.
He just died.
Did he? I didn't know he did.
He just died maybe last month.
But he continued to practice. He was continuing to practice, really, and he was getting along in years,
yes.
Most recently. But.
Yeah.
What about
how are you going to treat the lecturers as a kind of independent section in which you?
I don't see how they can be treated independently. There may be a way. One thing that I was thinking about doing was developing some kind of timeline that at some point places the faculty across this 25-year period and maybe shows where people came in. And maybe place on that the key lecturers in some way. But
is there any record of the lectures given?
You know, when they were given?
And what did they say?
That I don't think so. But all of Henry's correspondence and files are available. It's going to take a lot of time going through a lot of that. Because, I mean, there were just drawers and drawers of them. But I can pinpoint the times that they were there.
I don't recall where that when the Woodley Max was in Raleigh.
Well, it was in the early 50s because I remember his being there.
No, I don't remember. He came to my class. Mm-hmm. And we were doing the Peruvian Revolution.
Yes.
Samuel, his instruction, and then he came. But he came late. And I don't recall whether he was just visiting all the studios and doing something instead of being allocated.
Whether he did a project or something.
Or they did a project.
Well, see, somebody like Thurlow can tell me that. Thurlow will probably remember that fairly.
Is he in Raleigh or in Canada?
Yeah, he's in Raleigh.
Did his wife die or not?
She has not died. She's been in poor health. Okay. Thurlow had a very serious operation himself. Okay. He had cancer of the testicles.
Oh.
And had to have his testicles removed.
Okay. But he doesn't make too much.
Well, I guess not, but...
as long as he can be removed, you know?
Yeah. Well, apparently, once that's done, he was out of danger for that particular problem.
they can put silicone wire, you know? How old is he? He must be my age, or not? No, you're older.
He was on the faculty when Henry came.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he harbors a great... he was very he and Henry were completely at the end of the time enemies. I mean, they Henry had little respect for Thurlow and treated Thurlow rather badly. That's why Thurlow was teaching that course in descriptive geometry, because Henry would give him the teaching assignments that were just terrible, and Thurlow didn't know anything about descriptive geometry.
You know, what happened with Thurlow, you know what it was, isn't that he was a very honest kind of a man, and being a landscape artist, he just took out some. Feeling for nature and good things of the environment, right?
That's yes.
It's a positive aspect. I thought that maybe he have no enough means to express or to convey inspiration.
Yes.
Maybe he has talent, but so when you talk to him on faculty meetings and so on, he was the impression that he was a little bit of an old-timer.
Right.
And maybe he was not, you know.
Well, I don't think the students.
Because there was some genuine things in Thurlow. And down to earth person who was telling you the truth as he was.
He was, there were times when he was really looked upon as a kind of a curmudgeon. You know, somebody was always criticizing everything and saying that students weren't doing good enough. And he was often getting into fights over grading because he was tougher giving lower grades than anybody else, at least in some of his classes. And so I know, in any case, Henry said he was lazy, said he wouldn't do anything. And so
yeah.
Henry, he got almost no raises in his salary. And I know at one time his salary was extremely low, lower than some assistant professors, even though he had been there for many years. And it was there ahead of Henry. But apparently, one of the reasons might be that Henry discovered that Thurlow on the search committee was not trying. He was not in favor of Henry. He was trying to get Hugh Stubbins to come as the first dean. I think Stubbins was one of the candidates that they tried to interest in the job.
After Henry?
No. Well, at the same time.
He would not have been able to work, I think.
I don't think. I think Henry was the right choice.
Professional, I don't mean professional, they would think of what they did with buildings in the mm-hmm. office, but too much the man of an office, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I told you, when he gave the talk at MIT, he was looking for Plasma.
Mm-hmm.
what there was in the school, there was no communication between architects and painters either. There was no communication. The painters were not interested in what the architects were doing. And I thought that the painters considered themselves like a kind of elite that were...
What was the purpose of having painters in the school at that time, in your opinion? What was the whole purpose?
I don't know who brought that idea, whether it was Jim Fitzgibbon, because they were painters when I arrived. When I arrived, Rolgasso was already there.
Mm-hmm.
Bromberg was there, and Davili was there.
Duncan?
But that kind of, yes, he was.
And he was?
Yeah.
And later, George Berlin? No,
but I mean that Avelli just arrived, I think. Mm-hmm. And Roy also, it was within a year, maybe, or not,
mm-hmm.
when he arrived. Tanya can be much earlier.
Yeah, Duncan was from the beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning.
And then Joe Cox came a year or two later.
Yes.
So there was always that group of artists there. Yes. Was that idea not part of the Bauhaus idea, do you think? I mean, at the Bauhaus they had Feininger, they had Beyer, they had, lots of Paul Klee and all of those people.
But when you see the way of this Beyer, he was a graphic designer. You know?
Beyer made, yeah, but Paul Klee, for instance, was
Beyer was a modernist in a way, with his graphic. And I don't know whether Albert was there, but he was a geometrician of a square, but he was an artist. And then he had some relation with the architecture of the Bauhaus. And when you, he did a very nice fireplace here, that was in Connecticut, with brick. And you can see his mastery of patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get Cox, what is the relation of the painting of Cox with architecture? He's painting bridges, or he's painting things that are architectural sometimes, but mm-hmm. that has nothing to do with design, you know?
Yes.
Images. And I think that the Bauhaus, Kandinsky was different, but he was the kind of a person who they were, but it was sort of like Stravinsky, breaking the past and forcing people to think in a different way. But the way that the painters in North Carolina were acting, not even Duncan, had no relation with architecture at all.
Well, as I understood it, and you can tell me that I'm wrong about this, that the idea of the curriculum was that you would simultaneously study architecture or landscape architecture,
yeah.
And you would study art, or they had a general title for it called descriptive drawing, in which every semester, every student was taking these, and somehow the concept was that you needed this kind of the discipline of architectural design, but the designer also needed this kind of freer expression of art or painting or drawing or whatever it might be, sculpture or something like that. And then that was, as I understood, the concept of the curriculum. And those two paralleled, and we had it every semester for 5 years that I was there. We had these two, the architecture part was the bigger part. It was generally given twice as many credit hours. But every time, I mean, you'd go to architecture for 3 days a week, and then you'd go to this drawing or painting course for 2 days a week, and that those were supposed to be kind of like two sides of a coin that were to contribute to the designer. One that would be, and I think it sets up a real...
thinking backwards, I say, taxi driver, I think that it was not the right approach, because... that freedom, they can do it in many ways. You know, they can do it by reading books, going to exhibitions. You don't have to take a course to do that. And so now the students who made something positive out of that, one of them was Wisner,
mm-hmm.
and the other is Taylor, right? Or no?
And Ellenzweig, he was a wonderful artist. He did beautiful work.
Yeah, but the rest they took it as a kind of a chore. And I think that in architecture would have been better maybe to have a discussion, to bring scientists, the physicists, the biologists, an anthropologist, somebody who was dealing with aesthetic issues as a philosopher, to give some education to the students and then relate it, but not trying to relate one visual thing that was, by choice of the faculty, was not parallel to the language of architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Albers was, you know, in a way with the Bauhaus. Mm-hmm. Duncan was not, when Duncan was a painter, he was not expressing his roots of his beliefs in geometry. And he was an ingenious and a recollectionist.
Well, the other, you mentioned other gaps. I mean, I always felt that the teaching of history, architectural
because
history, was very poor.
With the imagination that he had, he could have made paintings with light and interpenetration of solids, in a unique way that created the work of the, he didn't do it, he just went to the that he wanted to be just a painter. Like, mm-hmm.
Like a Renaissance painter.
Like a painter, you know?
Yeah. He could have made three-dimensional...
Yes. I would say that the sculptures, Roy was more fitting for the artist or that kind of tendency.
Mm-hmm.
The same as Philip Bosky here in MIT.
Did you feel that the teaching of architectural history, you mentioned anthropology and things like that, but the teaching of architectural history, I felt, was never very satisfactory. It was
it's all wrong. First I heard that Cecil Elliott is writing a book, or wrote a book, on the history of technology. And that is a thing that I was never taught.
Mm-hmm.
That is just as important as architecture, history of technology. Now, if it is taught like this, it's not history of technology, but you cannot divide what is architecture and what is technology. It was never taught. And then in history of architecture, at least in MIT, really belongs to another generation,
yes.
You know? So you have to understand that whatever he taught, it was obsolete, in my opinion. Even if I never had one of his classes.
Obsolete. Yes.
Even if I never had one class. And that what people are teaching today is obsolete. You have this man, Henry Milam, who was a faculty at MIT, that I like very much as a human being. And he's now the director of education of the National Gallery in Washington. He was the director of the American Academy. He's a very nice man. He taught a course that was called Baroque and Rococo. And I think that the architecture has bigger issues than Baroque and Rococo. And when people are enthusiastic about that kind of a subject, it's because they miss the big picture. But they say the what I'm trying to write in the book is that the history has been taught horizontally by ages.
Mm-hmm.
And then periods and styles. So you have the Corinthian and the Gothic, and then you have the Gothic, and you have this one, and everyone is. But all of them have something in common, or should have had something in common. Even the bad buildings, like this. And it was better to teach concepts and not buildings, mm-hmm. and to teach concepts vertically. Because if you teach buildings horizontally, there is no way that the person can know what are the common denominators of all the buildings. And suppose in one case is a structure in which you go from when there was not a structure, like in the Egyptian and the Greeks, to the structure, the first one that existed, the Pantheon.
I read that.
Yeah, the first one, you know, it's a breakthrough. And the second is the Gothic. And the third is the modern technology of Sinchef. But even the modern technology is based on the Pantheon. That is the first three-dimensional structure, the three-dimensional. It's continuous. So then they discuss, suppose, the medieval, and they go through all the cathedrals, and then you know everything from the English to the French, and then you know all the names. But really, there is first, nobody talks about the space. What is space? How it is achieved? How light is affecting space? How space is related to structure? What is the space of Hagia Sophia of Constantinople? What is the breakthrough that then begins to develop ideas in the Renaissance? And it's because everything is done like that. And because the historians are born from historians. They read books. The only source that they have is books. So then they read what the book says. And then they write another book in a different way. But is brainwashed by what they read before. And then the third one writes another one, and there is no change.
The same buildings are always cited in every book.
And if somebody says that it's a wonderful building, anybody wants to say it's a wonderful building for the rest of eternity.
Somebody did a very interesting study of all of the books of modern design, in which they took all of the modern architecture. They cited them about, I don't know, 10 books that were written about the history of modern architecture. And they listed the buildings, and they found that there was such a common core of buildings that so many everybody dealt with, let's say, the Villa Savoy or Falling Water, or you name a few, but there was a very limited number of buildings. I mean, if you take Frank Lloyd Wright's career, where he built 400 or 500 buildings, many very small ones, of course, only about 5 were ever mentioned, 5, 6, or 7. Johnson's Wax, the Unity Temple, Roby House, Falling Water, maybe 1 or 2 others. Corbusier, and of course he didn't build very many, but the 3 or 4 that always mentioned the same, and that certain architects are never mentioned anymore, they dropped out.
But those are easy cases.
Well, all I was trying to say that it's what it's confirming what you're saying, that the historians use the same ones because one person did it, and so they use the same ones over and over again.
Well, I discovered it with the Dome of Florence, you know, and an engineer like Salvadori read a book and copied what he read, and he added as part of a chapter, and it was finished. But the problem with Frank Lloyd Wright and the Corbusier is an easy one. When I see a building of modern architecture, a book on modern architecture, I just glance it like that. And as soon as I see the choices of buildings, I know the quality of the book. Or the judgment of the author, and I don't even look at that, you know, because they begin to appear the Harrison and Abramovich and the buildings that are of the awkward. That's what's possible. Going back to this book, I don't mention any architect. The last architect that I mentioned, I think that it was Paxton.
he wasn't an architect.
Unfortunately. I don't want to get into names. I don't mention buildings except the old ones, and then I just stop. Mm-hmm. And even when I have to deal with the medieval
periods,
I don't call it Gothic. And I did the design myself.
I saw the diagram.
That is a combination of two, because I want to depersonalize the case, you know, whether Chartres is better than Reims or Notre Dame, or this and that. Nobody has discussed light, nobody has discussed space, nobody has discussed structure, nobody has discussed the relation with the sea, the geometry, structure, space, and light, and how this is achieved, and what does it mean, and the deal with optics, and many things.
did you teach courses other than the design studio?
No, nothing.
Never. Yeah. Because every faculty member, you were treated with as very special in a way, because everybody, who know very little, I've had to learn everything, always had to teach a studio and then some other course.
Yeah.
And so you have to figure out what it is that you can do. And so we have courses now in energy conserving, you know, issues, climate control, of course, structures. Courses in history and theory, things of that sort, and architectural practice and ethics and things of that sort. So introduction to computers and things like that. Everybody teaches one or more courses.
But how do they know? They have to learn or well prepared.
Well, in some cases, people have majored in that when they were students, or they had contact with
but
that.
But it was not a tradition of that time.
Or building construction. I mean, for instance, I took a course in structures, or it was kind of an introduction to structures with Fitzgibbon. That was I never had a studio with him, but I took that course. So with George Matsumoto, I took a course called Materials of Construction, in which he explained, you know, how wood worked and concrete and brick and so forth. So they were all teaching additional courses. I guess because you were the department head, you weren't called upon.
It didn't come to my mind that day. That neither Russia and MIT, nobody asked me to teach 2 courses, and I would not have done it. because I didn't know. It would require too much effort for me to prepare it. And later, no, I wouldn't have done it. Because then it becomes a kind of a service course.
Yes.
A service course.
Well, we have, for instance, we have three courses. Now, we only have three courses in structures. But in those days, we had many courses. And people like Charlie Kahn were teaching it. And, of course, some people over in engineering as well. And mechanical equipment for buildings, things like that. They were treated as service courses. But everything like that now is taught in the architecture department. So it's taught by architects, not by engineers any longer. Which, I think it's better, although they're far from perfect. But the... I felt like that we were introduced to a lot of things in those courses. I had to, in Fitzgibbon's structures course, I had to build some models of vaults and space frames and things like that. And at least I understood something about some of those systems, the geometry of them at least. And I remember that George had lots of lectures. We had to read stuff about how materials, what the properties of materials were, and had some typical details and things like that. The worst course I ever had was a course in specifications that Terry Wall taught. It was the worst course. I made a C in that course. I only made two C's in college. One C in that course and a C in physical education, basketball. And I hated both of them. But I don't know, the curriculum was always, to me, there was a kind of elegant structure that at least was presented in the thing, because it showed the image of a tree, as if there was some kind of organic structure in which everything was related. And it included drawing, it included the design sequence, it included courses in, sort of technical courses, I guess, and history courses, and things like that, and they were seen as a part of a kind of network or a branching system, that everything was supposed to be related together.
But I think that the teaching of architecture is going through a tremendous crisis, and that nobody wants to face it. I don't know whether MIT will face it, and if they do it, it will be by luck. At the present time, there is a conflict, because the future of everything is the computer. Mm-hmm. The resources of the computer are unlimited. Not today, but as it is developed. You know, when you see what they do today, what happened 20 years ago is another world. And they don't emphasize too much. Mitchell, who is the dean, who is an expert on that, is going to put emphasis on that. Now the problem would be how they use it. Because they use it as a tool to simplify a drafting operation is a stupidity. It does it, but it's not a big act of creativity. And that unfortunately he doesn't understand too much what architecture is or the possibilities of trying to relate it. when he was here at that time with Correa, I mentioned one thing that then indirectly, when I offered that gift to MIT, Bill Dixon told me that the dean had suggested the program, that I didn't want to tell him, that I talked to him about something like that. And my idea was that they should have one cost for putting the world upside down.
One course for doing what?
Putting the world upside down, or architecture upside down. And that
is that related to turning the pyramid?
Well, it could be anything that is let's call it exploration.
Okay.
Exploration in which there is nothing that is what they can't. As I told you, that there is a site and there is a program and there is a client and there is a scale, you know, and that they have juries and I think that there are two or three things that they can develop because. But what is the function of the university? It's not to create professionals to make a living. Mm-hmm. This is what they do. And that's why people go to university.
That's why the students come.
That's where they go. That's where they go. And that it's not a way to do it. I have the opinion that cities are absolutely awful. absolute complete animation attitude. Doesn't meet the modern requirement of anything. Doesn't meet what a person's imagination could conceive today. And is the thing that the one fact leads to another one, and one side to the next one, and that the land has been too much divided by speculation, and there is a vocabulary developed, and there are codes and norms and agencies, and it's a tremendous machine that does. But if somebody has to conceive a new city, nothing of what you see here is useful.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking that maybe one possibility for Mitchell was to have one class that deals with exploring different ways to do things, you know? Even as an absurdity or as a symbol, that is an absurdity, is to design a new stair. A new way to go up with a stair. What would be a different stair? Just as a problem to see what is the solution of that, you know? Just as a kind of example of the...
What was his reaction to this?
He's a person that, you know, he always smiles and tells you yes. You don't know what he thinks. He's always like that. Yes. We can lead him with Correa, and then Correa is a person full of passion. Very nice man, full of heart. It's a wonderful person to be together at any moment, you know. And between the two, we discussed many items, and then he was looking at me, or Correa, yes. I don't know.
Do you think Charlie Correa has had he's become an international celebrity as an architect? Are you aware of that?
Oh yes, but I tell you one thing. Let me start with an introduction. We are very close friends. I have a tremendous love for him, and he for me, and with his wife. And we have known him for many years, and I tell you that he's a friend of Fred, because he was his classmate.
Yeah, Fred worked.
Yeah, but he calls me first, and he sees me more often than he sees Fred. And he has a tremendous regard for me and respect. And he's a charming person that I would like to see him as a resident in Cambridge, because there was a moment that somebody said that he may become the dean of MIT, because he wanted to be. He wanted to be the dean. They told me that. But his position is overblown, totally overblown. And he was in his building and now he got a gold medal of the British Institute. He's Euros in international competition. And finally, comes here and he goes to New York to a sort of big event, you know. I said, where is this coming from? And what did he do? And he did something that is very interesting, but he didn't do it. He has a very interesting Indian painter, a very good painter, who does in the tendency of the would have been the Greek vases with those black figures and the very simple colors, black and white and terracotta. And then you have an architecture that is all virtual, because art is all done by the painter. If there is a wall, it's not a wall, it's something that the painter has in your head. So find the window painted, but there is not a window. And then you find that he has created a kind of series of images. They published, I think it was in one of the magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And that you go to his office and it's full of Indians that are totally incompetent. He's a great talker. And a great salesman with tremendous grace and ability. So when he explains a design, he goes through the Indian tradition and this and that, and then you find that you say how sensitive this kind of man, that man is, because he considers that and that, and then when you see the result, it's not too much, you know?
Mm-hmm. That was my impression, but
the other thing is that he's a handsome man, that counts. He's quite tall, that counts, and he has a beautiful personality.
And he stands out in contrast to the place that he is.
I mean, located in India.
Yeah.
He has a kind of
yeah.
a reputation based on being yeah. outstanding in a place where there are very few
yes, qualified. He has a very nice sense of humor, a wonderful sense of humor, you know, very fast. And he wanted to be the Dean of MIT.
When Mitchell was chosen?
Or? Yes.
And I'm surprised. I would have thought he would have been...
The Dean of MIT was elected in a very, very strange way because... When the other dean resigned, who was a nobody, totally ineffective.
I thought so too.
But it was a nothing. I read in the text, and I wrote a letter to the provost, saying that they were going to select the dean. And I remember that I made 5 or 6 suggestions what to do. And the provost behaved extremely rude. He wanted to have the situation completely under his control. He selected the dean, not the school. And he's a chemist from MIT. And his letter was something saying that I receive your letter and I receive very much your advice. I think that I deserve at least half an hour of conversation, you know? I don't want to bring others in, but I have given to my team more than $100,000 already in gift, you know? And very few people know. And that when I offer the other one, there will be no alumnus that ever has offered them such a gratification, whatever it means. And my idea was not to appoint a dean and to wait for 3 years, for a number of years, and not to rush. And then to see whether they can get money from the foundation. And then joint effort between a number of universities, and I didn't mention which one, because sometimes you find that a small university, small school of architecture has more qualified persons than the big one.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean that you have to go to Yale and Princeton and Columbia, and then maybe you find one who knows where that has more talented persons, you know? And then do a study and change education. And then select the dean. But that it was necessary to do, and not to get one, and to unless they select the one that was the right one who would do what that big mm-hmm. commission would do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it depends who would have been the chairman of the commission, because you have to have a leader. If you don't appoint the right one, you kill already the results. And that was a recommendation that I made to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see how that is such a radical proposal that somebody like a chemist is not likely to.
No, but another recommendation that I made is that the schools of architecture are passing through a financial crisis, like every institution, yes. like the government also. So they have to save money. And there is a tremendous waste in education, a tremendous waste. And one day, walking with Zalewski, I say, how many years of structure you have? He says, 2. What would you teach somebody else that you have to teach it only in 1 year? And he said, And he kept walking. And before he gave an answer, I said, Václav, now reduce it to 6 months. You know? And it would be interesting to find out what is the essence, how much you have to teach, how much the student can learn from those basic things himself. And the same applies to history of architecture and to design and to many things. And I think that there has never been an effort to create an efficiency in each course. And it's too much waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the design project lasts, sometimes there is a project that it lasts a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks.
Yeah,
in 2 weeks. It depends. It depends of the mental attitude, or even the faculty member. And to create an urgency, you know, and they go out every day and walk like this and keep that. And he said, we stop that. And then with that, they can introduce missing courses.
Yes.
When you mention that there is no money or time or something, they can introduce missing courses.
Yes.
And one thing that I pointed out to the provost is that the Department of Architecture cannot perform as a complete entity.
Yeah.
If they don't introduce landscape, but not landscape as it is taught, landscape in the Department of Landscape. Landscape in which there is an integration with architecture in a completely different attitude. That is not settings or gardens, or completely different attitude. Mm-hmm. And that has to do also with the designs of new cities, in which the nature has to participate more. And not in parks and squares, that then you say, well, this is for nature, and this is for traffic, and this is for shopping. But everywhere, in a different way, you know? And they don't do it. So the buildings, the way that we are teaching buildings, are based to fit into the an obsolete city. The computers are taught by people who don't understand anything, what is the application to architectural design. Because they are not designers. The teachers of history are not designers either, so they read books and they keep repeating what they read.
Well, those are the worst case conditions. I mean, you know, I would agree with you in general, but I've seen some cases where those some of those things are integrated properly, but I will agree that they'll...
It's not a matter to put plans as I do here, you know? I don't mean this kind of intervention.
No, I know what you mean. I know, because I've seen your projects. I know what you've illustrated all these ideas in your designs. So, I mean, I know what you mean when you talk about cities in which the landscape participates more fully.
I have an item in the book that talks about facades.
About what?
How do you call it? Facades.
Facades.
Facade. I am confused now because I'm translating to Spanish from fachada.
Fachada.
Facades. That is a nonsense, a facade. It divides the life of the inside to the exterior. There is no continuity, and there is no transition in anything, you know?
Well, I read that you said something about if all the facades along the street were eliminated, there would be a kind of continuity of space.
Yeah.
And activity.
The whole city and now you walk in tunnels like that and you cross it and like this and you don't have space. They call it Pelli, an expert on Celtic walls. And the mastery that he has in Cetogramas of Cesar Pelle, mastery of designing curtain walls by some critics. I don't understand what is the mastery and what is the to be a master on curtain walls.
Well, I think that's just a reflection of the critics' limitations, that their limitations. Of, I mean, they're basing comments like that on conventional approaches to architecture. I mean, without any... I mean, you're raising fundamental challenges. I mean, they're just evaluating...
But don't you think that the universities have to dedicate at least a percentage of the effort to do that?
I think so, yes.
It's not a trade school, you know?
Yes.
And that they have to say, well, why don't we have a group of faculties here? They select three in those fields, give them a budget, have so many students, and see what they can produce as a source of resource that little by little will begin to get filtered into the other part.
I think one of the difficulties, Eduardo, is that the university, the schools of architecture depend totally on funding on the central administration, and the central administration is not. I mean, just like you, the provost apparently was not receptive to your approach.
that the schools are trying to figure out how to keep the money flowing in by doing things that are understood, providing services, dealing with architecture on a kind of academic basis, which is academically respectable. And so I think that I'm not arguing that that's the way it should be.
So with this foundation, they would have received, let's say, $1-2 million on a very serious endeavor. I think that they will save money if they get a group of six engineers to design a new curriculum, a new way to teach structures.
That would be the best thing.
And do it in 6 months.
Yes.
And how do you simplify the subject, you know?
Well, I think that would be great. I really, we never have time to stop and do that. I mean, because we're always dealing with the things that are happening right now. And I agree.
And in history, why do they have to teach so many buildings? Why don't they say, let me be only 20? But really, that requires a tremendous capacity to select them, because the person really has to know what he's talking about, and why he selects those 20 buildings, and what is he going to get with those 20 buildings, why he's missing the others, the 50,000.
Well, you might be interested to know, one of the proposals that two or three of us at iSchool have been talking about is to teach architecture using the best examples of architecture. And we talked about teaching structures strictly by selecting the best buildings, best examples, and not trying to start out by teaching about loading and statics and things like that, but to teach architectural structures on the basis of the principles that one can observe in the best designed buildings. We've talked about, but you know, when you have somebody who's teaching structures that's already there, has been teaching in a different way, you would need somebody that would be very imaginative to do that. Somebody like, if T.C. Howard were more articulate, he's not a very good speaker, he doesn't know how to, it's a little difficult for him to do that, but he's the kind of person who would take somebody...